Okay, what I want to start with, since most everybody's done now, we'll come back to second what the results are and maybe make some sense of what. That'll be the hard part of your tabulation, see if there's any consistency of reasons. Just anything that comes up multiple times. Okay, one of the things I'd like to start with is to just, if some of you would be willing to talk about how you first heard about Perot, I think that would be real interesting. How many of you had heard of Perot before this electoral season? Okay, so about half people had heard before. And how had those of you had heard before heard of him? In what context? Yeah.
I heard in two ways. There was a book I read about him rescuing a bunch of people from Iran.
Okay.
Can't think of the name of the book.
On Wings of Eagles.
Yeah.
By Ken Follett. How many had read that book or had at least heard of that book? Okay. And those of you who had not heard of him through that but had heard of him before, how did you know of him? Yeah.
I know there was some contact with the Soviet Union, and I can't remember what it was.
Does anybody know what that is? I don't know.
Citizen diplomacy of some sort.
Where he was going to the Soviet Union. Do you remember when that was?
It's a number of years.
Okay. Any other? Yeah.
And son that went to work for him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still on the media.
When was that?
I'm trying to think what year that has to be.
Early 70s.
7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Through the automobile world.
Through the automobile world in Detroit, okay.
Right. I lived in Dallas from 70 to 80 when he started EDF.
Okay, so he was a well-known figure in that community. And could you maybe say how he was well-known? That is, was he in the paper a lot, or?
He was a rising star, obviously, technically, with EDS. And people in my parish worked for him and spoke of some of his policies, some of which people read and think are not true, but in fact at that time were true.
Okay, and was that in a favorable context for the most part, or
no,
unfavorable?
No, it was dress and who you date and your where you go.
So they found him intrusive into their lives rather than
right.
The inspiring leader, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a friend,
Yemen.
He's a real interesting competitor in the computing consulting world with EDS.
Uh-huh. And is there, again, a sort of an animosity there?
Not really. They seem to have a very well-run company and do real quality work. So uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know how many of you know the history of Ross, but he originally started as an IBM salesperson. And in the beginning, at least, there was some sense that he might have been taking stuff from IBM to start his own company. So at least in the beginning, there was some bad blood there, apparently. Okay. I just want to ask you, too. We didn't follow, you had a son working for him. What was that, the impression that you got from the son?
We saw a metamorphosis. You know, he graduated from college in longer hair, uh-huh. Raggy jeans, and one day, and the next day, he was in wingtips and three-piece suits, you know.
So all of a mother's dreams came true overnight. Right? Yes, my mother would have loved it if I'd gone to work for him right after college.
I mean, it was one day here and the next day there, right. So, I mean, the dress code was very much.
Uh-huh. But did he like that experience, or working for?
Yes, he did. He enjoyed it. It was very much of a learning situation, and once you learned, you moved on, which is what he did.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now for the rest of you, the other half who didn't know him before the campaign, can you remember when you did hear about him and how? Anybody?
Yeah. I think I just heard about him like on NPR. I listen to NPR every morning, and I mm-hmm. just heard his name, and then started hearing him talked about a lot more because once I heard his name as someone as a potential candidate.
When, do you remember when that was?
That was probably about 4 months ago or so.
Was it March or April,
yeah.
Somewhere in there?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? Anybody else remember? Yeah.
I saw a woman in a wheelchair with this campaign sticker on the back. That was the first time.
Okay. And where was that you saw her?
It was at a Course in Miracles lecture.
Okay. All right. Anyone else remember?
Yes, but it's like about February, so I saw a bunch of of some pension.
Okay, did it?
Oh, you were pulled back from something.
Did anybody actually see the David Frost show in which they discussed a possible candidacy? No? Okay, that's interesting. Neither did I. No, you did.
Yes.
And were you, what was your impression at the time?
What was the, I was impressed by the competition.
And
you're... Yeah, I did too, now that I think about it, and I was impressed too.
And what impressed you about that?
It just seemed like an honest person.
Uh-huh. Very candid and... Okay. Okay, I remember the when I first heard about it was driving from Idaho to Montana, and we could get almost no radio stations. The only radio stations we could get were on the far left side of the dial, which is not the far left of the political spectrum. And there was a talk show in which they were talking about a number of potential people as presidential candidates, and Perot's name came up as a possibly viable candidate, although with some criticism at that stage. Okay, what I'd like to do, let me just say a few more words. One thing about the book on Wings of Eagles, which is kind of interesting, is that it was commissioned by Perot. He got a best-selling novelist to write it for a fee and retained the rights to that, which included rights to supervise what went into the book and what didn't go into the book, which I didn't know. I actually was given the book but forgot the guy's name. After reading about 20 pages, I didn't read any more of it, but I didn't remember who Perot was until the March thing. I know what I looked at. Can anybody trace in your own mind, since he is a fairly recent phenomenon for many of us, unlike someone like Bush who's been around a long time, can you trace any changes in your attitudes towards Perot over this 4-month period? Yeah.
When I first heard that he was running, I think it was on the nightly news, and it was when they were passing around the petitions to get him on the ballot in some primaries. And I thought, this is a hoax. You know, I never heard of him and wondered what was going on. And I kept asking people that I knew, who is this guy Perot and what are his political views? And no one seemed to be able to give me what he was supporting and what he was not in favor of. And nobody, and when the first couple clips they showed on TV, he mostly was interested in signatures and said he was going to cloister himself and then come out with his views. And it disturbed me that someone would be running on their personality rather than their views. Then,
of course, we have never seen this before.
Well, usually they give us, you know, a teaser. Okay. Anyway, and then I saw the interview, was it 2020, with Barbara Walters? Him and his wife. And I was surprised because when I listened to him, I thought, well, gee, maybe this guy has something. And I was impressed with his wife. And, you know, I thought, well, maybe there is something here. And so I started asking again people that I knew. Then when he would appear again in little clips on the nightly news, and especially with the issue of the MIAs, that he said he had information, but he wouldn't share it yet, that bothered me. That if you really do have information, why are you holding it back? It's either not relevant, there's no substance to it, or, you know, there's something secretive. And so I get from his interviews where he's being asked things directly, I sometimes get a positive feeling. But when there are clips of him, you know, with other people reporting, I'm not so sure, and so I feel real ambivalent still.
Okay, it's an interesting observation you made, that he's more persuasive to you when you actually hear his words, but then when you hear reports about him, then that raises doubts. Does that resonate with other people too? That you feel, yeah.
The model of his working at EDS, I know
kind of is carried into EDS in California, which I'm a little more familiar with than Texas. And it's legalistic. It's very heavy-handed. And he doesn't come across as being that way at all when he's being interviewed, but obviously that's how he runs business.
Okay, so it's not just the press reports, but it's this kind of anecdotal stuff. And we heard that over here too, that people who had close contacts with him report a different side of the coin. Yeah, did you want to say?
Yeah, just to expand on that, it's like I think a couple of interviews that I've seen, I was impressed with the way he handled the questions, and not that he was being evasive, but he just said, well, this person that made this statement about me, I've never met him personally, he's just making an assumption based on other people's facts. So when I heard the way he answered those questions, I was impressed. And then reading different articles in Fortune or just like paper and that kind of thing, it seems like it's just a media's distortion of them. And that's where I've got the difference between the two.
Yeah.
One interview I heard of him with one of the female reporters with All Things Considered on public radio, I thought very disturbing because he was very rude. And when she asked him some questions, he said, well, obviously you are set up by someone who's planted this with you. And he was just hostile and rude and didn't know what All Things Considered was, if you indeed had a radio program, is what he said. And it was just awful. And that's one of the few interviews I've heard of. So I was very
interested. Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to borrow a little thing from what Joan did the other night, and let's just list a few things on one side. Instead of Jesus, we'll put Perot here. This doesn't mean there's some sort of equivalency. But a couple of things we've heard is a candor, that's a plus. On the other hand, we've heard sort of a hostility, secrecy, that he withholds information and doesn't want to release it. What were some of the other pluses we heard?
Demands accountability.
What?
Very strong business sense.
Business sense.
Let's put down a minus side too.
Yes, put down.
Okay, in what sense is that a minus?
Put legalistic on the minus side. So,
and what do you find negative about business sense?
I guess anti-union, anti the people on the bottom of the business, you know.
Okay, but this is a presumption, but it may be. Okay, yeah. Okay. Perhaps anti-whatever. Anti-labor or
pro-big business or something.
Okay, now that's an interesting juxtaposition here, because how does he present himself in his speeches? He's the little person's candidate, that this is people power, and that I'm only going to run if all these people out in these local communities draft me. This is not something I want, it's something that's been forced on me. Okay, so he's the little guy's candidate. However, the irony or paradox would be that he's also something that most of us little guys aren't, which is a millionaire. And which makes you wonder how much does he really know the problems that we face when we don't have enough money to pay the gas bill at the end of the month. Yeah.
I would say bullying from that one.
Bullying, okay.
On the opposite side of that, I would put that he demands accountability.
Okay.
I've not seen in this country for a while.
Demands accountability.
Very few women or people of color.
Okay. Possibly, okay, few women and minorities. Okay.
Non-specific on his program.
Non-specific. Let me tell you, one of the things that impressed me most, I heard him on a talk show, a call-in radio show once, and one of the things that impressed me is he said, well, if I were president, I would not be giving a lot of photo opportunities in the Rose Garden. I would be, you know, inside with my sleeves rolled up with all the guys from Congress working until we solve the problems. That is, I wouldn't rest until we got problems, and I wouldn't be kind of this public president. What I would be is somebody who concentrated on getting the job done. And I think there's a sort of element of sort of a can-do, persons. Get the job done one way or another, we're going to find a solution.
And of course, on the plus side, he doesn't seem to be trying too hard to please the media.
But in some ways, he seems anti-media.
Right.
Right?
He seems...
I'd say equal to the media.
Yeah.
Or equal.
Many of his responses don't seem to be canned, you know, from a...
Nonpartisan. He's not a Democrat or a Republican, and I think it's kind of interesting if you look at him on issues. It's almost as if he intentionally tried to get some issues out of each camp to prevent him being labeled either, you know, a reactionary conservative or you know, some crazy liberal. Yeah.
I think he's non-political, and he's not trying to please everybody.
Okay.
Okay,
and I think that relates to one that we wrote up here before about candor. There's a sense where you do really feel that, unlike Bush or unlike Clinton, who gets their opinions only after they've looked at the daily polls, that this guy says what he thinks, and even if it's sort of stupid, it's nice to know that what he actually thinks, which you're never sure of with these other guys, right? I mean, do we really know, you know, if we sat down in a room with George Bush and there are no cameras on and, you know, and he got drunk and we got drunk with him, do we have any idea what he would say?
Not that we would care,
but, you know, but there's all these stories, well, actually he was this way in his college days, and same with Clinton, well, he seemed to be this way or he seemed to be that way, and he only did this because of that, and he only, you know, we don't know. And there's a sense with Ross that we probably would have at least some, you know, I mean, he might come up with all kinds of crazy opinions, but we have some idea of what kind of person he would be. Now, what the idea might be that he would be no fun to get drunk with, but at least we have some sense of who he is as a person. Yeah.
I missed the first part of this, and I'm curious where this is leading.
Me too.
Well, what I think is interesting is that you've identified willy-nilly, plus and minus,
right,
and you haven't consulted us.
What do you mean?
I see at least half of those items on the minor side that are very positive for me.
Okay.
What I think he's a billionaire, I think, is positive.
Okay, and what way?
Well, I think he has influence.
Okay.
I think the man can use his money in a very positive way.
Okay.
No,
I think that's right. People have said, how do you buy a billionaire? You know, you can't buy it with nickels and dimes. And so he's not going to be as beholden to special interest groups.
I think that he's non-specific, has very positive political implications, especially in international relations.
Okay, which
I think that he's a bully. Makes some sense in certain contexts. Teddy Roosevelt was a bully. Okay. You know, I think there's some things about the minus side of it that could be very positive when used appropriately.
Right, for example, you know, George Bush dug himself a hole with the no new taxes promise. If you're not specific about that sort of stuff, then you're not breaking your promises when you have to change your policy, when you suddenly realize, hey, we got to have taxes. Okay. So there are some things like that.
I saw a bumper sticker in Chelan before I came in that said, parole, take our country back. Okay. And I hadn't seen that before, but I think that what he's verbalizing is right. I think that a lot of people in our country see the minor stuff there, the minus stuff, as being positives. I think people that think our country has been too hostile, too secret, too legalistic, too bullying, want to change. But a lot of people want it, you know, are sick and tired of us being second rate and want our country back. That's what he represents.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe now would be a good time to kind of do the poll results.
I'm working.
Oh, we're not done.
Do you want more comment then?
Before we have the poll results, let's...
one more.
Yeah.
Speaking as a U.S. citizen who lives in Canada, my impression of Perot is that he's a man on a white horse and that belongs to the minor category. He's terrifying.
Well, but people on white horses are not terrifying, are they?
Oh, yes, they are.
They're saviors. They're the ones that save us.
All the answers. And if you disagree, it's too bad.
Okay. I think that what we're seeing here, and I think that's a very good observation, is that the same characteristics that are very attractive to him are also somewhat scary to people, or the same characteristics that are scary to some people are also attractive. Here's just a little. Is there anybody in this room who has not felt some positive attractions to Perot. None at all, okay? Okay, so what we would say is that at least with the majority, maybe 80% of people here, there's something about him that is attractive in ways I think that probably, well, how many of, well, let's see. How many of you would say that there's nothing that's been that's attractive to you about George Bush? Anybody can say that. Okay, how many of you said there's nothing attractive about Bill Clinton? Okay. And I think that, I mean, it's clear that there are far fewer people who felt that way about Perot, that there's something about him that, even while we might not want to vote for him, that we say, hey, you know, we need something sort of like this, even if this isn't the right guy, there's something like this, yeah.
I think one of the scariest things about Perot for me, or one of the negatives, is reflecting on what this gentleman said, is that is some of the people that I find myself in discussion with who also support him, who I would not have thought I was in the same political camp at all with them, you know, and they're all gung-ho for Perot, and I'm not sure if they're seeing him wrong or if I'm seeing him wrong. Uh-huh. You know, but I find myself in the same political camp with folks that I've never been in the same camp with.
I think part of the reason that I would like to solve how I feel about Perot, and because I want to find him appealing, is because I don't find either George Bush or Bill Clinton appealing, and that leaves me with no one.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
And I feel if he runs a close second to Bush, he's going to have a very strong influence in what's happening in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a TV interview of his Kansas campaign manager, who's kind of a grassroots kind of guy. And he's very candid about it. He said, he's really kind of a pig in a poke to us. He said, he's an unknown. We hope he's a good unknown. We hope he's a prize pig in a poke. But he said, we may, you know, we have the feeling that this is the guy we need. We may be making a mistake, but we're taking a chance because he is non-political and candid.
I think one of the interesting things that we've kind of analyzed here is that this non-specific stuff is it may be the key, both liability and plus. What we do have a sense of is something about the man's character. That is, that there is a person there, which we don't know about most politicians. You know, that whatever character or personality they had, you know, was long lost, or maybe never was there. Maybe if you become a politician, you are the kind of person who is just a chameleon, and then you sort of gravitate into politics. I don't know. I mean, how many of you know any of those kinds of people personally? The ones I know often are that way. People are very flexible in their opinions and are much more concerned about being liked or whatever. Anyway, I think that the non-specific character, though, of his position on issues is both a liability and a plus. That it, because on the one hand, we can kind of fill in the blanks from our own mind. Well, maybe he'll do this, maybe he'll do this, maybe he'll do this. And if we're kind of optimistic in our outlook, then those are pluses. If we're kind of pessimistic, or, you know, then we may think, well, he's going to fill in this blank in who knows what ways. Okay. We have results of our poll. Let's see.
Here's the results. There's all the. Here's your raw data.
Okay, here's our raw data. I think that was a lost tab.
Piano's that.
Okay, the results are Bush 9, Clinton 11, Perot 8, Nunn 20.
Can you go slower? Can you do that?
Bush 9, Clinton 11. Perot, 8, and Nunn is the winner with 20. Mickey Mouse got 1. Mickey always, you know, fairly consistent candidate. And he's never done much campaigning. Just to finish up a little bit more on this, I think that the key question right now in Perot's campaign is he keeps saying, okay, I'm going to define the issues, I'm getting together this big group of advisors. I'm going to think about them, and I'm going to define myself and present some clear views on these things. The question is, when he does that, will that kill his candidacy? But if he doesn't do that, is his candidacy dead in the water because he's sort of slipping a bit in the polls now? So he's on this, he's got to do this juggling act, and at this point it looks like he has to go ahead and be a little more specific, and we'll see where that takes him. Okay, let me just read some of the comments. Of course we don't know who they're, okay. Oh, the nun. The nun category says, the others do not reflect my views. Commercials, this is kind of unclear. They prefer commercials to candidates, or they don't like candidates' commercials.
Don't like commercials and ads.
Okay. Do not know all three stands. Don't trust Bush. Not happy with Clinton, and no experience of Perot. Their conscience wouldn't allow them to vote for any of them. None will change our country. Poor ego strength of two, and one's behavior is too crass. Vote does not make a difference. None are any good. They intend to destroy.
Turn it over.
More. Okay. Bush, don't trust Clinton. And it says don't know Bush. Bush is pro-life. He is a cool dude. He has experience, especially in foreign affairs, and he's a Republican. Clinton, new blood, economic policies, more liberal than others, reflects my views, lesser of three evils, I guess the least of three evils, may choose Al Gore as vice president, which apparently he announced he would do. Best, education, Democratic Congress, cares about African Americans. Perot, my kind of guy, not policies but common sense, dissatisfaction with others, dissatisfaction with the way things are, with the two-party system, not part of the system, will break the gridlock in national government, is independent. Okay. Okay. One of the interesting things I think that this shows, and that Perot is a certain level of dissatisfaction and frustration with the system we have. And to go back a little bit and think through how we got to this point in the campaign, somewhere around, well, September last year, they started talking about who the front runners would be in the Democratic Party. We, of course, knew that George Bush would be the front runner of the Republican Party. And so a lot of names were juggled around. We went to New Hampshire. Clinton won. We went through a number of primaries, and there was a horse race between... Did Clinton actually win that?
Songas
won. Right, Songas won. Then Clinton came on strong after that. Songas had to drop out. Okay, so the Songas-Clinton race, which was the big contest, suddenly evaporated, so we had to find someone else for Clinton to be fighting against. The next person was Jerry Brown, who of course had gotten no media coverage while Tsongas was around, but now suddenly Brown becomes a viable candidate. Not quite viable enough, he loses too many primaries, loses especially the New York primary, and it's just about the time of the New York primary where suddenly we get a lot of media coverage of a guy named Perot. Now, why might that be? Why would the media start picking up Perot after the Democratic, after the New York primary?
Well, it's because he's known to battle with Clinton as far as Democrats are concerned. Bush had the cannon in balance for a while, but they just vote against Bush.
Right. So the Buchanan race kind of peters out on the one side. Excuse that terrible use of the word, Peter. And on the other side, the Clinton race, so we know by March pretty well who the nominees are going to be. And so now we have sort of 4 or 5 months where we have to sit around and wait for the conventions before the real campaign starts. And the question is, how do you sell newspapers when there's nothing for people to be excited about? It would be the same thing as if, you know, the Yankees were 20 games up in the pennant race. I mean, who cares after a certain point, right? So my argument would be that, that one of the things that's happened in this country is that politics equal a spectator sport. Okay. And that many of us love to read the paper every morning or listen to the news or watch the news on TV to sort of see who's ahead, how are they fighting each other, what's happening in the campaign. But like other spectator sports, such as football or tennis, most of us rarely get involved ourselves. You know, we play football, we might break some bones or we get worn out or sprain some muscle. And similarly, if we got involved with politics, we might be depressed or be on the losing team, or it's just too much hard work to actually go do that stuff. So we prefer this as a spectator sport, and as a spectator sport, it has to be amusing. It has to engage us, okay? And one of the ways that it's become more engaging is by having these little things which we all love called sound bites, okay, which are these succinct, pithy little phrases, where's the meat or whatever they may be in a particular campaign, that are grabbers, that grab our attention, that kind of summarize some essential point. One of the interesting things that media research has done is found that over the last, since the 60s, so that's almost 30 years, the average length of a sound bite has decreased from over 40 seconds to around 10 seconds. So that the amount of actual information that we get from a candidate's lips tends to be about 10 seconds. That's not very much time to explain complex economic social issues. Even if you talk fast like Ed does, it's still hard to cram that much in. Now, clearly you get more coverage if you, if you read the New York Times every day, but most of us don't read the New York Times every day. In Boise, if I were to read it every day, I'd be reading it 3 days late, so I'd be finding out what happened. And of course, you never want to do that with a spectator sport, you know. Yesterday's news is history, right? And we're not interested in history, right? There's nothing as dead as yesterday's news. So it's on TV, on these sound bites that we kind of, oh, that was a zinger. Or on a commercial, which again is a prepackaged form of a candidate. Now, one of the clever things that Perot has done, and you see all the other politicians now getting in line to do it, is say, okay, we're not going to play this game quite this way. I'm going to, and we're also not going to go running around and giving speeches, you know, in every little burg around the country. What I'm going to do is get on talk shows. We talked a little bit about this the other day as being one of the trends towards a slightly more democratic form of media. That is, at least we can participate, as Andy Warhol would say, for 15 seconds, or he said 15 minutes, we'll say 15 seconds, where we get out there in front of, in the public arena, and make our opinions known. And Perot said, this is a way for me to deal directly one-on-one with people and still get my message out in a broader fashion. And a lot of politicians were kind of reluctant to do that. They didn't like that kind of exchange, or they didn't think it was important. And I would also say that talk radio over the last decade has become a much more important force in our society. That is, lots more people listen to it. Okay, so what they've kind of done is figured a new way of reaching the people, and Perot figured that first, and I think in some ways is the best at it, because he has this sort of candor for the most part, except when you try and press him on what, on particular issues. Okay. This gets us to the question, the third part we talked about media so far, to the question of democracy, and what does democracy mean? And what role does media play in the democracy? And part of my argument here is that in some ways what media is doing, remember, media is always something in between us and the original experience, whether that's a film projector, or whether that's a TV set, or whether that's a sheet of newsprint, it's coming between us and direct experience. It's filtering experience. So what it's doing is taking these candidates, whoever they may be, filtering them through this channel to us. Okay? But what it is doing for the most part is removing direct contact. And for the most part, removing us from direct activity. And what I would argue is that media tends to make us a little more passive and a little less active. Let's go a little different direction right now. Let's talk about what, in terms of both democracy and the media, what are the benefits and what are the pluses and the minuses of a Perot candidacy? Not of Perot himself, but of what he's doing. Okay, we've alluded to a few of these.
Wake up Bush up a little bit, make it all possible.
Okay, wake up Bush?
Yeah.
In what ways does Bush seem more awake now?
Well, Buchanan woke him up a little bit in primaries, and it's like, I got the message, but I don't really think he can just say that, but I don't think he has. So,
okay.
Trying to switch things around.
Okay, so it wakes up Bush.
I mean, he's not as asleep as Reagan was, but.
Okay. In what ways do you think he's more awake now?
Well, I just think he's more explosive in the poll. Like about a year ago after the war, he was the most popular president by polls ever. And now he's declined. I think he's third in the rankings right now as far as letting the role of that. So I think he's woke up and found out that America isn't happy with what's going on. Most of us are a little ticked off and want to see.
I'm just going to add that his big thing has always been foreign affairs and what's going on in other countries. And finally, Americans are saying, hey, George, take care of America first.
So a little more attention to domestic affairs.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else that's positive about this?
Well, one of the things he said is that in terms of the problem solving, that he would bring together the best people in the country, whatever political party, with the belief that you can come to the table and that these problems are solvable if you get the right people together. And that touches a lot of places in both parties of belief, of wanting to believe that that works and that we can do that. There's some sense of hope about that, I think.
Okay.
And it's not just the nonpartisan, but real experts. We have a belief, a faith in experts.
Okay.
I think the voting public is becoming less apathetic.
Okay, in what ways?
With the fact that we now see more than Republican or Democrat as a choice. More so than when Anderson was running.
Okay, and just in terms of grassroots organization, more people are involved in getting petitions and signing petitions and all that. Yeah.
4 years ago, you wouldn't have seen this group, here discussing the other two candidates.
Right.
Somebody made the comment to me, and you can tell me if it sounds right or not. Best thing about the Perot candidacy is that he could be the first president to be elected since Kennedy, who wasn't really a media president, who wasn't presented to us sort of canned in these sound bites.
Uh-huh. Although he just hired the day before yesterday the firm that did Reagan's commercials.
I think one of the minus might be the a sense of simplicity of the White Horse thing about I don't want to use any labels, but the sense of I think everybody really feels we're in trouble in many dimensions of this country, and I think we really want someone like Perot to take the country back and lead us out. And the fear of that is giving over. When you let someone take something back, that implies you give up power. Mm-hmm. And yet we're talking about more people participating, and I'm confused as to how that works. If in fact more of us are participating, and yet the simplicity is growing, means we give up a lot. I think we give up a lot when we say, gee, just fix it, will you? But we don't know who the casualties will be. We gave some guesses, but there's gonna be casualties.
Okay. Okay, I just want to get you in a second, but I like that comment because that's sort of the way I feel when I respond positively to Perot. I say, you know, these guys who've been in there are just jerks. You know, they're interested, you know, they're lining their own pockets. They, you know, don't really, aren't responsive to what people want. That often I feel that the people now are leading the politicians rather than the politicians leading the people. And here's a guy who seems like he would lead us. And in a way, I feel like saying, look, I can't control my government anymore. I have no choice who I'm voting for senator or congressman. They're all bad choices as far as I can see. Let's get somebody in there who's going to, what you know, the phrase, throw the rascals out, who's going to clean house, who's going to, you know, here, you take it. I can't do anything anymore. You take it, Ross. And I hope to heck you can solve it. But, hey, if you can't, are we going to be in any worse shape than we're in now? Okay? And that's the part of me that, I mean, that's when I respond positively. Yeah.
John, that's making break the stalemate that we've been in.
Break the stalemate. And that has to do, to some extent, with this partisanship, right? That we've got these Democrats versus Republicans, which are sort of locked in battle, but are also kind of enjoying all the privileges of that position. Okay? Yeah, you had
I'm confused. Is your simplicity then supposed to be on the plus side or the minus side?
Well, I'm not sure, because I think the answer is...
We put simplicity over here, too.
Okay. How much are we going to give up to get whatever we're going to get?
Yeah. And that's the notion of handing over the reins of power to you.
When you have three candidates, there's always the possibility that the person who gets the most votes won't become president because the third candidate will have... And so it will be the person who would have lost the election will become president.
Is that good or bad? It depends on whether your guy got the most white votes or not.
Yeah, but then you have the guy with the most and the guy who's in second or third together with an overwhelming majority of the votes probably, but the person who's in there then is the second.
Or third.
Yeah, second.
I mean, the one possible scenario is that it goes to the House, Clinton finishes third, and the House, because they're Democrats, names Clinton president.
Aren't they working on an amendment to correct that situation?
Well, yeah. Okay, so there's a possibility that that will create some sort of instability, right? And if the third most popular candidate were president, how much authority is that person going to actually have? On the other hand, it could be argued that maybe the second and third candidates together each represent similar sorts of views that are more important than that do form a majority. Who knows? Yeah.
I think one of the real problems with a third party candidacy is that, well, at least up to this point, Perot certainly has played the card about voter alienation. People are fed up with gridlock in Washington, the whole schmear, political privilege, blah, blah, blah. And we've heard this whole litany going on, well, since Reagan got in, basically, you know,
right.
his campaign also. I think the disservice that does, I think Perot could probably avoid that by getting specific on his program so that we could talk about issues finally at last. But I think what's more likely have to happen is that he will play upon voter alienation and divide people rather than try to find some kind of common ground where we can come together and try to govern the country.
At the very least, he may have a very rocky road trying to deal with the professional politicians who make up Congress. Yeah. Even if he can sort of get some sort of rapport with the people. Yeah.
Interesting comment, because the perception in the media is that the difficulty will be dealing with the Democratic and the Republicans in the Senate and the Congress. And actually, the difficulty will probably be faced with the entrenched bureaucracy, the same thing Reagan faced when he claimed he was going to eliminate the FBA and reduce the deficit and cut back on unnecessary social welfare programs. His competition was not the Congress, but the Senate, but competition with the bureaucracy.
Although he did, you know, do substantial, how should we say, alterations of the bureaucracy. If you know anybody who was in that bureaucracy, they'll tell you. Yeah.
Well, it seems I've gotten the message also at some times that Perot has lined his pockets rather very unwise. I mean, as far as underhanded, I should say.
Uh-huh. And if someone is greedy enough to get $1 billion, maybe they're interested in making that second billion or whatever it is. That is, you've got a pattern of being very much that way. Who's to say you're above it just because you've got a certain amount of money?
I think another problem is that if it's a close election, whoever makes it will know that 2/3 of the electorate never voted for him.
Maybe. Who knows? I mean, maybe, but if it's a close election, you're right.
It could very well be that way.
It could
but
be.
What difference does that really make?
Right. Well, what's the story now? I mean, you know, when Reagan, you know, half the people vote anyway in an election, so you get a quarter of the people voting for you if you get a majority.
I think one of the minuses, and maybe he'll get specific, but I believe the country is more polarized than it's been in my lifetime, mm-hmm. yet even more so than the 60s, whether it's like racism or Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I don't hear anything about that. And if we talk about classes, which may be dated language, but somehow the distance between people who power and people who are disempowered and the way people are disempowered, I don't hear any kind of connecting going on. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that in the style. I don't see that in the whole approach to the political process. Yeah. And the expert thing is positive, but that also smells like disenfranchisement of the people who are disempowered.
Right, well, and that's been one of the comments right now, that the Perot campaign is transforming itself from a grassroots campaign to bringing in the experts to replace all these volunteers. Now that we've got this far, now we need to bring in the same old guys who've been doing the same old thing to run it. I do think one of the things about Perot's candidacy is, though, that his willingness to say, hey, there's some problems here. Now, there are problems that we can solve, or I can solve. But that's one of the things you don't hear very much from either of the other candidates. They don't say, you know, well, everything's either okay or it's almost okay. And I don't think that corresponds to the feelings of frustration that a lot of us see just all about us in terms of how the society just isn't working the way we think it should be working. Okay, was there another comment? Yeah.
I'm concerned about the candidacy selection process. We, for 100 years, had a method for selecting our candidates where people have choices to a certain extent, sometimes more than others. But will this lead now to a media who selects our candidates, or to a rich person who says, hey, I've got a lot of money to spend, I'd like to get a lot of attention, and therefore I'm going to run for president, and then it's a matter of how much press can I get. If I get enough press, then I can run.
Okay, I think that's a very key point. You know, the centrality, what you're saying, of the media is key. How do you get a hold of that? Of that thing, and clearly money or being an established figure is the way you do it. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I think one of the big disconnections I have is how white male the system is right now, and I think Ross Perot is a candidate who is least impacted by any need or desire to include other people within the system. Mm-hmm. You know, the other two candidates
I think you raise another point there, which is that the Perot candidacy, at least at this stage, doesn't have a party. It has volunteers, but it doesn't have any kind of ongoing structure, which is the same thing with the Anderson candidacy. That it didn't have an ongoing structure, and I think there's some sense that we've been talking about, that a feeling that neither the Republican nor the Democratic Party is offering the answers we want. Here we have this one guy who may or may not, but isn't responsible to an organized kind of constituency on a long-term basis.
I think one of the big questions here would be, what would be the effect of Perot's winning the election on politics, future politics? I suspect it might fall in the plus column, but I'm not sure. That's a giant.
Now, why would you say it might be plus, or why might it be minus?
Because politics is, as has been described, is kind of in gridlock at the present time. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's so bound up as to have become very ineffective. So one would hope that breaking that gridlock might be a positive thing. I'm not so sure. I mean, that's a giant question. What would it mean if he did that?
I mean, one of the things that we were all taught in civics class is that the essential element in the stability of this country has been its two-party system. And I think it's undeniable that that's a very stable system. The question is it a very responsive system to what we need? And is it really the way that we need to go, or is it preventing any kind of evolution? Now, in most Western democracies, that's not the case. There are at least there are typically more than two parties, or at least the potential for there being more parties. In this country, it's very difficult to have any kind of third party. And that's a question, is he going to create a third party, or is he going to kind of accommodate himself to the powers that, you know, to the parties that are, place himself in one camp or the other, and move from there? Sort of taking over the Democratic or Republican Party by coup rather than by the primary process.
Yeah, it is a comment earlier. It's like if he's going to, Perot's going to get all the experts there, so called experts, and if it happens to be that 80 or 90% of them are white male, why would that be bad? I mean, it's America, you know, America's.
Spoken like a white male.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly. But I'm just saying, you know, because America, you know, America was founded on that, and it's not a matter if a woman or a black or a white or a purple guy is better for the job, then that's far be it. That's, I think lots of, like, you know, you find like a reverse discrimination, like, oh, we need to fill this quota because this guy's a certain color, or he's a certain age, or she's a certain whatever. And we're looking past who is the expert and who really deserves to be there. So.
That assumes expert is something that's commonly accepted by everyone that is one definition of expert, and I don't think that's the truth.
That's the same for everyone, exactly. I don't mean expert isn't by one person saying there's something else, an expert for someone else.
I think that does point to a question of who are experts in the society. Typically, experts are people who happen to, you know, by some hint of, as we were saying the other day, lack of imagination, gotten a higher degree, or because they knew the right people and managed to work their way up into the system, got into either wealth or power. Those may not be, I mean, for example, the real expert on poverty may not be a sociologist with a PhD. It may be somebody who's living on food stamps.
And what can you tell me about his criticism of Bush entering the war, this last war?
Perot's criticism.
Yes, Perot's criticism.
Another issue, and one I think that kind of cuts across political parties a little bit. One that I don't think he's raised as a major point in his campaign.
I have a question. I wasn't here to begin with. Did the people here who voted know that Al Gore was going to be the vice president for Clinton before they voted?
I did.
How many did know that?
Did or did not know?
How many did know that Al Gore was named? So less than half. Would that influence people's opinion at all?
No.
With mine.
Vice president doesn't do very much
anyway. Oh, makes a big difference. It'll make a big difference with.
Although sometimes they do get to be president afterwards.
If Perot gets elected, and he brings in the experts to find better solutions to problems, he still has to take that legislation to Congress and get passed. So he's going to have to work with the people in Congress, both sides of the party. And he's going to have, I think, an advantage because he's going to have the biggest group of freshman congressmen coming in that we've ever had since World War II, because more have retired and resigned and gotten beat in primaries, and we're going to have more women candidates in both the House and Senate simply because there are more money. There's going to be a lot of change, not just in the presidency, but in the Congress, too.
So to lead this, one more comment.
I was just going to say, well, you know, like Perot or not, I think one thing has to be a plus about his candidacy is I think he has created enough controversy to draw a lot of people in who have never been involved or haven't been involved in the democratic process in a long time. And that's certainly what this is all about. And I think in that sense, it has to be good. And win, lose, or draw, I hope he started something that gives more of us more choices.
Okay, I think two nice optimistic endings. My comment again would be, let's not fall back into some kind of political spectatorship, and let's work for what we think is right. That's what democracy means. So thank you for a very lively conversation.